Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Fidel Castro resigned as Cuba's president today after nearly a half century in power. 10 U.S. presidents tried to take down the 81-year-old Cuban leader. All failed. Most glaringly, the CIA-backed Bay of Pigs invasion and the standoff over Soviet missiles in Cuba that took the world to the brink of nuclear war. The big question now, what, if anything, will change when Castro steps aside? We'll ask. This hour, On Point, Cuba and Cuban-American relations after Castro. Joining me first up from Miami, Florida, is Carol Williams, Caribbean Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times and longtime Castro watcher. Hello, Carol. Welcome.
Hi, Jane.
What was your first reaction after you heard the news this morning?
I was a little surprised that he announced it ahead of Sunday's National Assembly meeting. It's been speculated for months now that he might use this opportunity to step down as head of state, and he has hinted himself that, you know, he might be ready to do this, most recently in the memoirs that were released this month in English. He makes several references to the need to pass on power to a new generation.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So he speculated for months. Tell us exactly how he made the announcement.
Well, it was in one of his writings and reflections, as they're called, in the Communist Party newspaper Granma. Very early this morning, a posting was made that said pretty clearly that he does not aspire to another term as president and will not accept one if he is named at Sunday's meeting of the National Assembly.
Did he say why, other than speculation over his health? Obviously, he's been in poor health for some time.
He does. He makes some reference to not being of sufficient mobility and energy to carry on the revolutionary strivings, and that it needs to be done by somebody else, that he says that he would like to have discharged his duties to his last breath, but that it would be a betrayal to my conscience to accept that responsibility in the condition he's in.
So he's 81 years old. He hasn't been seen in public since the summer of 2006 when he underwent intestinal surgery. Do you know exactly the status of his health at this point?
Well, he was seen about a month ago when Brazilian President Lula da Silva visited, and, you know, the pictures didn't look any better or worse than the ones that had been released by the government over the past year and a half. But, you know, I don't know that this signals a worsening of his condition or just a recognition that he's not in condition to lead the country.
70% of the Cuban population was born after Castro came to power, after the revolution. So they've known no other leader. Do we know the reaction in Cuba today?
Well, the news agencies that have correspondents in Havana have been reporting that it's sort of business as usual. People have been prepped for this development because he did temporarily hand off powers to his brother Raul a year and a half ago, and he hasn't made a public appearance in that time. There have been some inklings of potential economic reform and a little more liberalization of society, and that Raul Castro has encouraged citizens to speak out against things that don't work and to criticize the system in hopes of improving it. And I think people are very much, you know, encouraged by those signals, but nobody is really willing to go out and, you know, make a, you know, bring the protest to the streets, certainly as long as Fidel Castro is alive.
The Cuban National Assembly will convene on Sunday, as I understand it. What is the order of things here? You mentioned Raul Castro. How and when will a successor be chosen?
Well, the Sunday session is intended to reseat the 31-member Council of State, which is a body that acts as the head of state for Cuba. And Raul Castro has long been the, you know, designated successor to his brother as the president of the Council of State. But there are a couple of other figures in the Cuban leadership that have been seen as, you know, rising stars and potential long-term successors, because Fidel says in his memoirs that, you know, Raul's only 4 years and some months younger than him,
right,
and that the country really needs to pass on the leadership to a new generation. The person who is most often named as a potential, you know, next generation leader is the Vice President, Carlos Laje, who was the architect of some of the economic reforms of the early 90s that were mandated after the collapse of the Soviet Union and the end of subsidies to Cuba.
And he's relatively young, only 56.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's considered young in the
Carol,
leadership.
Carol Williams, thank you so much for your time and your update from Miami.
Thank you.
Carol Williams is the Caribbean Bureau Chief for the Los Angeles Times. Joining me now from Washington is Julia Swag, Director of Latin America Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations. She's author of Inside the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro, and the Urban Underground. Julia, welcome to you.
Hello, Jane.
What was your reaction today, Julia, to the news?
Well, like Carol, I think most of us saw this coming, and I just think that I can almost imagine the delight in Fidel Castro being able to really plan his own succession and watch it unfold. So I wasn't surprised, and I look forward to the announcement on Sunday of who becomes the next head of state, of course.
World leaders, of course, have weighed in on the news today. In Rwanda today, President Bush said that future discussions about Cuba should focus on its citizens. Here's that.
The question really should be, what does this mean for the people in Cuba? They're the ones who suffered under Fidel Castro. They're the ones who were put in prison because of their beliefs. They're the ones who have been denied their right to live in a free society.
Julia, how might U.S. relations with Cuba change after this era of Castro is over?
Well, I think in 2008, under the George Bush administration, there's no possibility of any change. The United States exercises only a negative influence inside of Cuba, helping with its policies of embargo and hostility for the regime to shore up the sort of anti-American nationalism. And so we're not at all a player whatsoever in any positive sense. In the future, it's possible, especially as material changes are observable on the island in terms of economic reforms even, or possibly, but more remotely, political reforms, that a next administration might begin to move in the direction of opening up ties informally, people-to-people contacts, more Cuban-American travel, talking with the Cuban government on security issues that the two countries bilaterally share, that sort of direction. There's, I think, a pretty broad political consensus in the United States that our current policy has been a complete failure. And so once we get past this 2008 election, where domestic politics and Cuban-American voters are in play, we might, in fact, see some sanity come back into the policy. Mm-hmm.
Castro has said that he wants to step aside in favor of younger leadership, the next generation, he says. He says he doesn't want to cling to any position of power. And yet in the announcement of his retirement, he said, quote, he's not saying farewell. He says, I just want to carry on fighting like a soldier of ideas, end quote. So how much impact will he continue to have? A sort of elder statesman role in Cuba, if you will, Julia?
Well, I think he will continue to have an impact. Look, he already has been playing this kind of granddaddy elder statesman role, issuing these thoughtful long pieces very, very regularly. And those are directed toward the hardcore revolutionary cadre on the island that really do see Fidel today and also when he's gone as representing sort of the embodiment of Cuban nationalism and independence. I also think his living for this last year and a half while Raul Castro has had provisional power, has helped the second Castro, Raul, manage expectations and keep them under control and keep them low. So the longer he stays around, the more slowly I think we can expect economic reforms to unfold. But now that he's made this formal statement that he will not accept a leadership post this weekend, it really starts the clock ticking in terms of the need to get the bread and butter issues on the table that they've been talking about for the last year and a half underway. Mm. So that's a balancing act between providing cohesion and yielding to the next generation at the same time.
You talk about the economic reforms. What about some sort of transition to democracy under Raul? Unlikely, more of the same in governing at least?
It's, Jane, really hard for me to imagine any time in the near or even medium term, sort of this, you know, Jimmy Carter going down there and monitoring some OAS election transition to multi-party democracy, or the IMF having some sort of Jeff Sachs-style economic restructuring program. I think big changes like that aren't what we're going to see. And the political opening of, you know, I think the economic reforms will create momentum toward demands for greater voice and autonomy. But I don't see the kind of, you know, whole cloth political transitions like we saw in the other South American authoritarian regimes in the 80s and 90s coming anytime in the near future now.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about news today that Cuban leader Fidel Castro is stepping down. We're speaking with Julia Swag, Director for Latin America Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of Inside the Cuban Revolution, Fidel Castro and the Urban Underground. And right now I'd like to bring into the conversation another voice from Miami, Andrew Nodarce Leon. He's director of the Cuban American National Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to advancing freedom and democracy in Cuba, and the largest Cuban organization in exile. Welcome, Andrew. Nice to have you.
Hello, Jane.
What was your reaction this morning upon the news of Fidel Castro stepping down?
Well, I think this is a historic moment, and I think this marks another step towards, hopefully the transition towards freedom and democracy in Cuba. These processes tend to occur in steps, and this is, this is another necessary and important step in that direction. I think it provides an opportunity for those that remain within the power structure of Cuba, including Raúl Castro, to take significant steps towards democratic change and restore the possibility for self-determination on that island. I think if they don't do that, the people of Cuba will demand it. I think more and more you're seeing evidence of that in the streets, in the dissidents, and I think it's inevitable that they're going to have to make significant changes, or I don't see how Raúl Castro is going to be able to hold on to power.
I want to listen to Castro here for just a few seconds in his own voice. Lots of questions, of course, about his health. But here Fidel Castro tells a crowd in Havana that he is okay after apparently fainting during the speech in June of 2001.
Estoy bien.
Andro, what do you remember about Castro? You were 12 when your family left Cuba, is that right?
Yeah, I grew up in Cuba. My childhood was there, and I remember vividly what it was like to live there. And what I can tell you is that it was a horrifying place to live. Cuba is a police state. It is the only reason why Fidel Castro has been able to maintain power for nearly 50 years. It's that you're totally controlled in everything that you say. Even at the young age of 9, 10 years old, I had to live through all sorts of repression and all sorts of censoring in what I wrote at the age of 10 or 11. So it's pervasive. It's a country where you have no ability for self-determination whatsoever, and frankly, Cubans are no different than the people here in the U.S. or in any other part of the world. I mean, they want to determine their own path. They search for freedom. It's why so many Cubans have left over the years, millions at this point, risking their life many times in order to do so. And frankly, that's the ultimate testament to what it's like to live in Cuba. Cuba is a country of 11 million people, the overwhelming majority of whom, if given the opportunity, will leave the country.
You talk about a horrifying place to live. What about basic necessities, food, shelter? Were those an issue growing up in Cuba?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The biggest contributor to the Cuban economy are remittances from the U.S. and from outside of Cuba. Cuba is a totally broken economy. I spent a lot of time while I was at the University of Pennsylvania researching Cuba's economy prior to Castro. And frankly, there's a stark contrast between the achievements that that country had attained socioeconomically through a broad base of people, not just at the upper echelons, prior to Castro, and the conditions under which I lived were frankly, yes. I mean, food was an issue, despite of the fact that my parents were both professionals and had good economic standing, quote-unquote, on a relative basis. Food was an issue, and we had to depend on what we could receive from outside of the country in order to really be able to survive in that country. And from an educational point of view, the same thing was true. I mean, everybody reads very well, but you're not allowed to read or write anything that you choose. So education in Cuba ends at the basic level of being able to read and perform math, but you have no real access to any information in the free world, and that's kind of the environment that you live in a capsule, if you will.
I'd like to listen to some sound that we've pulled from the year 2002, where Cuban exiles are at an anti-Castro rally in Miami. What is the sense, Andro, of Castro among exiles in the United States?
Well, I mean, I think similarly, Cubans inside and outside of the island, view Fidel Castro as, as an impediment to their most basic right of self-determination. Fidel Castro is not in power because of any popular level of support. Fidel Castro is in power because he's been able to build a very effective police state. Fidel Castro would not, in a million years, win a free and open election in Cuba. He knows this, and that's why there hasn't been an election in Cuba in the last 50 years that is a real free and open election of any sort. And in general, I don't think the views are, frankly, all that different. The difference is that when you're in Cuba, you're unable to speak freely about your views and the way that you feel about the situation there. And once you leave the country, all of a sudden you can express, everything that you think about it. But, in short, he's been an impediment to self-determination, and he has single-handedly destroyed an entire country and separated millions of families.
You mentioned the next leader of Cuba, possibly Raul Castro. I know that there are other possibilities, as our correspondent Carol Williams mentioned at the top. Could you speak more about your hopes for Cuba, for its future, politically, economically?
Yeah, I mean, my hopes are, first and foremost, that the people of Cuba finally have a voice to determine their own future, that they have an opportunity to elect their leaders on an ongoing and regular basis, because they'll certainly make mistakes along the way, as we all do, and that the leadership that's currently in power take advantage of this historic opportunity in order to provide access to the Cuban people to that self-determination that they so much desire. I think that if they don't do it, they will be judged very, very poorly by history. And frankly, I think the Cuban people will no longer stand for it. And again, if you look at what happens with Las Damas de Blanco in Cuba, with the dissidents that are there, the political prisoners that are there, the amount of activity that's currently going on within the people seeking change, clamoring for change, is frankly unprecedented. And I think the Cuban government's not going to be able to withstand it.
Mm. Let's go to the phones now and join our invite our listeners to join our conversation. First, from Salem, Massachusetts, is Rob, who's on the line. Rob, welcome.
Thanks, Jane. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is sort of about the implications of this event for world socialism. Is this just another nail in the coffin for socialist movement, or is the mantle passed on to, Chavez and Lula and others in South America?
Good question, Rob. Julia Swag, do you want to take a stab at that?
I think that the caller's raising a really important issue, which is, what is Castro's legacy in Latin America? And, you can look around the hemisphere and see, in a sense, that his children are already in power. Mm. I mean, I You look at Lula, who's got a 20, 30-year history with Fidel Castro in Brazil. Look at Michelle Bachelet, who, after she and her mother were imprisoned and tortured under Pinochet,